are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Rudin versus Lincoln Land. Mr. Baker.
Good morning. May it please the court. Before this court this morning, there are two separate issues. First, what constitutes a background circumstance in a Title VII reverse discrimination claim? And second, in this particular case, did Jeanine Rudin present sufficient evidence of pretext to avoid summary judgment? The facts of this case are fairly simple. Ms. Rudin was a part-time instructor at a community college in Springfield. A full-time position opened up. She applied for the position. She was passed over in favor of an African-American male, and she has brought this lawsuit alleging both racial discrimination and gender discrimination. Now, we get to the prima facie case. Lincoln Land conceded that Rudin was able to satisfy the prima facie case of gender discrimination because Ms. Rudin, according by all accounts, was an exceptional instructor and well qualified for the position. The issue before the district court then became whether Rudin was able to satisfy the background circumstances prong of a reverse discrimination claim. Now, this court first adopted the background circumstances prong in the Mills versus Healthcare Services Corporation case. That particular case shed some light on a concern that this court and other circuit courts have shared for a long time, and that is, if the first prong of the prima facie case is to have any sort of meaning, we have to differentiate between minorities and non-minority plaintiffs. As such, this court adopted the D.C. Circuit's analysis of the background circumstances prong. The question becomes, what constitutes a background circumstance? In this case, we believe there were several criteria that would have satisfied the background circumstances prong. Now,
you want to give some content to the meaning of the word fishy.
Well,
in our earlier cases, right?
Correct. I mean, this court, and I think relying upon the D.C. Circuit, said that there are two different classes there. One where there's something inherently fishy about the facts of a particular case, and another where there are background circumstances to suggest that discrimination, that this is the unusual employer who might discriminate. I think in this particular case, the circumstances are both fishy, and I believe that there are background circumstances. The first background circumstance that we articulated to the district court had to do with Lincoln Land's policies of inserting minority applicants into the interview pool. Now, in this particular case, there was a screening committee, as is set out by the policies of Lincoln Land Community College. The screening committee is tasked with several things, but their first task is to review the resumes and applications of the candidates. After doing so, each of the members of the screening committee determines whether someone is or is not acceptable for an interview. That was done in this particular case. At the conclusion of doing that, the committee determined that a particular candidate would require 5 votes in order to receive an interview.
Now, is that a working rule of this particular committee, or was there some general policy in the university or regulation in the university that said that's the way it had to be?
Judge Ripple, I don't believe that that was an absolute policy of the university. I believe, and they have attached a copy of the policies for the screening committee, and I don't think it says that it's got to be 5. In fact, the policies of the college dictate that there is not necessarily a set number of members on each particular committee. Some committees might have 5 members. Some committees might have 7 members.
How about the procedure of that committee, how that committee goes about its work? To me, this was the soft spot in your brief. You did not really focus us on whether there was any deviation from a standard operating procedure with respect to the proceedings of the selection committee. Are you arguing that that was part of the, quote, fishy, unquote, circumstances?
Well, I believe that the committee itself, when it met to review the resumes, approached it properly. They went forward and they reviewed the resumes. They all voted to decide who would get to be interviewed. Five of those people selected Janine Rudin. One of those people, the committee chairperson, selected Paul Hudson. The committee decided that in order to receive an interview, you would need five votes of the committee. Ultimately, I believe there were seven individuals out of, I believe, 18 who applied who met those criteria. Five or seven out of 18. I believe that is correct. Now, after that determination was made.
Did anyone vote for Mr. Hudson before the higher-ups requested his insertion into the interview list?
The only person who voted for Mr. Hudson was Mr. Bowen. He is the one who was the committee chairperson who ultimately made the decision.
When did he show a preference for Mr. Hudson?
At the very beginning. Yeah. What happened, Judge Ripple, was there was a listing of all candidates,
mm-hmm.
and it was called a candidate preference form. Every committee member was given that, and they were to determine next to each candidate whether they were or were not acceptable for an interview.
Yes.
When all of those were collected, Mr. Hudson had one vote, and that vote came from Mr. Bowen. That information was passed along to the EEO office, and the EEO office inserted Mr. Hudson into the interview pool. Now,
in other words, it gave Mr. Bowen a couple extra votes.
Well, yes,
it's
I mean,
a practical matter.
Well, I don't know that they did it because it was Mr. Bowen who placed the votes, or mm-hmm. it was the one voting because Mr. Bowen was the committee chair. I don't know that that's necessarily accurate. The way the policy works and the way it was explained by the EEO officer is once a list of candidates is presented to the EEO office, they review those candidates, and if there is a person who they believe is a qualified minority applicant, that individual may be inserted into the pool. That's what happened in this particular case. The decision on whether Mr. Hudson was a qualified minority applicant was made by two people, the EEO officer and Mr. Bowen. Those were the two people who decided, not the entire committee. The entire committee never voted on that.
And was there any deviation in that process from an established process? That's what I'm trying to find out, and where I find your brief, frankly, not clear.
Well, and Your Honor, I don't believe in that particular process there was a deviation. I mean, I do believe that the EEO office at this particular stage did have the right to reinsert Mr. Hudson in there. In fact, it's fairly clear in their policies that at this point in time, there really had not been a deviation from Lincoln Land's stated policies. The problem is, and Lincoln Land argues, that this really does not constitute a background circumstance, that this causes no prejudice or no harm to Ms. Rudin. Background circumstances don't necessarily revolve around the particular facts of a particular case. And in this particular situation, there were five people who received between two and four votes of the committee who were not allowed to interview. And I asked the EEO officer, I said, did you review them? And she said, no, she wouldn't do that because they weren't minorities. So in essence, what you have is a screening committee that is tasked very clearly with reviewing the applications and the resumes of all people who apply.
So what else do you have in the way of evidence? So you have your
the
insertion of the minority applicant. What else do you have?
We have a few other issues, Judge Posner. We have the superior qualifications of Janine Rudin. I believe that in Harding versus Gray, the D.C. Circuit outlined.
Forget the case. Just tell me what you think your evidence is.
Well, the committee itself put together a vote to see who was the most qualified or the best people for this particular position. In that vote, the top candidate, a woman named Teresa Gregoire, received 27 votes. Janine Rudin was second. She received 24 points. Mr. Hudson was tied for fifth with 11 points. One person beneath him, I believe, had 8 points. The committee, I believe, very clearly expressed that they thought Ms. Rudin was a superior candidate to Mr. Hudson. Another issue that we have raised as part of a background circumstance is administrative pressure. There is evidence that we have outlined in our brief that suggests that there was pressure placed upon Mr. Bowen to hire
by whom?
A minority applicant.
Well, by whom?
The pressure, we believe, came from the administration. And Mr. Bowen, of course, now denies that there was any pressure placed upon him. The evidence that we rely upon is threefold in our brief. Number one, Mr. Bowen had a conversation with Jeanine Rudin right after the decision was made. During that particular conversation, Mr. Bowen said, I had to do it this way. I just had so much pressure. I had so much pressure. I just had to do it this way. And kept repeating those statements. The evidence also comes from a woman named Pat Falkenberg, who was the secretary for the department. During her deposition testimony, Ms. Falkenberg indicated she went and she spoke to Mr. Bowen and said she thought it was unfair that Jeanine Rudin didn't get the position in question. And Mr. Bowen's response was that, I had to do it that way. I had pressure to do it that way. Now, there are some factual disputes as to what Ms. Falkenberg actually meant. Those factual disputes are addressed in our brief. The third evidence was from one of the committee members who testified that Bowen stated that the people up above him wanted a minority candidate. Another issue that we had were several memos, or a couple of memos, that were written after the fact. And in those memos, one of the memos that was written by Eileen Tapati, who was an administrative person, indicated, given all this, as well as the college's focus on minority hiring, Rich selected him for the position. The president of the college wrote, referring to Mr. Hudson and another individual, they offer us the opportunity to address the board's concern with minority representation among faculty and staff at the college. Mm-hmm. We believe that taken all together, okay, some of those individually would represent background circumstances,
okay,
but we believe taken
right
together.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Baker.
Thank
Ms.
you,
Your Honor. Birkert?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I want to address a few of these issues that have just been brought up. As to the process of inserting a minority into the interview pool, this is an inclusive effort. It is not an effort.
Well, wait. What I don't understand is it's lawful for a company, at least if it's engaged in past in discrimination in the past, to have an affirmative action program.
Right.
But you don't seem to be defending on that basis, right? You're not saying Hudson was hired pursuant to an affirmative action plan.
No. And
why is that?
He wasn't.
Do you have an affirmative action plan?
No. The college does not have an affirmative action plan. The closest it gets to any kind of affirmative action plan is this ability of the EEO officer to insert a minority
into
the
pool. Wait a second. Wait. What do you mean the closest? The closest it gets, that's a form of affirmative action. And if you don't have an affirmative action plan, then you can't. If you don't have an affirmative action plan and you get close to affirmative action, that just means you're discriminating, right? You're discriminating in favor of a minority, but you're not doing it pursuant to an affirmative action plan, which is what you need in order for that reverse discrimination to be lawful.
Respectfully, Your Honor, no, I disagree. I think that what we have here...
Well, what did you mean about being closest to an affirmative action plan? That is to say, you're giving a preference... Yeah, maybe putting them in an interview pool is not the most dramatic form of preference, but you're giving a preference to a person on the basis of race.
I think that the reason I said closest is because it is not an affirmative action plan. What it is,
well, that's your problem. That's not in your favor. That's against you that you don't have an affirmative action plan. So you're engaged in affirmative action, but you don't have a plan.
The plan that the screening guidelines that are included in the materials are the process by which all full-time professors are hired. Those screening guidelines allow the EEO officer to review the applicant materials after the pool has been selected.
There are, as I say, a company can engage in affirmative action, but there are limitations of various sort. I mean, the standard one is that, it's remedial. You had some problem in the past, so now you've adopted affirmative action. If you don't claim to have a lawful affirmative action plan, but you're discriminating in favor of a minority, then you're in legal trouble.
Again, respectfully, Your Honor, I don't think that we are discriminating in favor of a minority.
You just said you were. Just says EEO has the right to insert this minority. Does it have a right to insert a white male?
No, it does not.
So that's what's called discrimination. You're treating minorities different from the majority, and you're doing it not pursuant to an affirmative action plan, which would have to meet certain, legal requirements. You're just doing it.
I don't think that this is any different than the plan that is President Duffy v. Wool, where it was a plan to broaden recruitment efforts to bring minorities in. And the court found that the only harm to a white applicant is that they are required to compete against a broader pool of qualified applicants. And that's what we have here, a broader pool of qualified applicants.
Well, wait a second. That doesn't comport with the facts. Mr. Hudson would not have gotten an interview, much less the job, but for his race.
The committee is a selection committee only. So there were 100 applicants. After the 100 applicants are narrowed down to a number that can be interviewed, in this case it was 7, and that varies depending on how many committee members there are and things like that. Then the EEO officer reviews the application materials of the candidates. If the application materials are comparable, and in this case, Mr. Hudson's were not only comparable, his resume reflects more education, a broader work experience, more teaching experience.
What are we to do with the committee's decision that he was not even qualified for an interview?
Because that's not what the committee does. The committee isn't saying this person is qualified, this person isn't qualified. What they're saying is these are the people we want to interview. There isn't a pass. There is no decision passing.
But you'd only want to interview the most qualified people, surely.
Committees are made up of personalities. And this committee was a particularly difficult committee, did not cooperate with the department chair, had very many problems with the department chair.
That sounds like a jury question to me.
Pardon?
That sounds like a jury issue to me, not a summary judgment.
But again, we have to get to what the actual policy is. The policy here does not, it didn't take anyone out of the pool. It doesn't say to the committee, you can only have 7 people and then we're going to add people. You say, you tell us who you want to interview. We're going to look at the application materials after that, and if we believe there's an additional minority who is...
Ah, but you see, you're back with a minority again.
Yes, it does apply only to minorities. Yeah. But the way that it operates, it is... I don't believe any different than what the court saw was fine in Duffy v. Wool, which is to include minorities, to make efforts to include minorities so that you just broaden the pool of applicants.
Of course, the other thing that's curious about this, you don't try to defend this on the basis that there's an interest, apart from, remediation, an interest in diversity, the Grutter case and so on.
Actually, that was before the trial court, and I referenced...
What happened to it?
Well, I honestly just did not include it in the brief.
Your problem is you want to deny that Hudson's race had anything to do with his actually being hired.
With his actually being hired, yes. We don't deny that it had something to do with his being interviewed.
Excuse me? No, I understand. Mm-hmm. Well, what about these others? So Mr. Baker listed 3 other things: the higher point total for Rudin, the apparent acknowledgments by Bowen that he had had administrative pressure, and this comment about focus on minority hiring. So, do you have any comment on those?
Yes. As to the administrative pressure, the record, I believe, when you read Mr. Bowen's testimony, is very clear. He was feeling the time pressure of getting a decision, a recommendation to the board by its April meeting. He had to have something done by April 8th. He called a meeting at which all of the committee members were supposed to come and give their input. Nobody came.
Well, according to Mr. Baker, one of the three bits of testimony is that Bowen told this person that his superiors wanted a minority.
That was a meeting that was held well after the decision was made. And
so
Bowen.
What?
Well, I'm just saying as to the timeline. It was not during the hiring process.
I don't understand.
And
it's an admission by Bowen as to what his superiors wanted. Why isn't that evidence?
One, Mr. Bowen does not admit ever saying that.
It doesn't matter whether he admits.
I understand that.
Right,
but Art Meyer was a committee member. He had no input into the decision.
What difference does it make? All he's doing is testifying to an admission, and that's admissible. And so don't we have to take it as a fact for purposes of summary judgment that Bowen did say that to him? And if he did, that's evidence. It's not.
It is evidence.
Obviously.
It would be some evidence, but I think at this point that's the only evidence you would have, and that's the scintilla.
Well, it's not the only evidence, because you have Rudin's point score, right?
Again, that was not any information that was ever provided to Mr. Bowen prior to his making the decision. Mr. Bowen did not know what the committee member's thinking was. The committee member did not provide that.
What do you have a committee for if the person who does the hiring doesn't pay any attention
to attempted to.
Rating of candidates.
He called the meeting. The committee members did not attend. As he testified, they had other things that they believed were a priority. They did not give this their effort. He did not have the information that he needed, and so he was under administrative pressure to get this decision to the board on time and made a decision.
I thought there was a factual dispute on what he knew about the committee's preferences after the interviews. Isn't there testimony from one of the committee members that the scores were communicated?
No. The documentary evidence, and that's what the trial court looked at, the documentary evidence is that Mr. Bowen made his decision on April 8th, and that recommendation went up the chain of command that same day.
But I thought there was testimonial evidence that there was a phone call placed.
No.
And a verbal communication.
There was Mr. Morgan said that he believes he talked to Mr. Bowen at some time, but he didn't recall at all when that was.
Before the decision was made?
No, he believes that he doesn't recall whether it was before or after. He can't recall at all. And Mr. Bowen said that it wasn't before, that he had no... The only information that did reach Mr. Bowen would have been a handwritten notation by Mr. Meyer. And he was one of seven committee members. So that was the only input he had. The guidelines clearly state that all the committee members are supposed to provide this information in writing, including the strengths and weaknesses of the candidates. None of the committee members did that. And so Mr. Bowen was faced with this time pressure to get his recommendation to the board in time for the April meeting, and he did that. And I think what's also interesting here, though, is in between...
What is the racial composition of the student body?
It's predominantly Caucasian. So is the racial composition of the full-time faculty.
Oh, I know that.
In 2002, the very year in which Ms. Rudin claims that she was discriminated against on the basis of her gender, the board hired a white female to head the department that had been headed by Mr. Bowen, who was an African-American male.
You trumpet that. It actually doesn't help you, because what it suggests is that the college felt under pressure to hire minorities, people, but somehow doesn't want to acknowledge that and fit it, you know, within some legal framework that permits that sort of thing.
Well, in that same year of the full-time faculty hired, 12 were Caucasian.
I know. You think you're helping yourself. You're actually hurting yourself.
Well, one of the background circumstances that was enunciated by this court was whether or not there was a pattern or practice of hiring minorities or an intense interest of hiring minorities.
Well, I think both of you are fascinated with this phrase, background circumstance. What we're really looking for, is there enough evidence of discrimination to justify a trial? And there does seem to be. And as I say, there are ways in which you can defend this kind of reverse discrimination, but first you have to acknowledge that that's what you're doing, want to increase your minority representation, and then you have to argue diversity or remedy. But you don't want to do that, so... makes your case.
There's never been a finding of discrimination on the part of the Lincoln Land. So there would be.
Yeah, but you have this you have the Grutter case. You can argue diversity. You want to have, you know, more minority people.
Yes, and in institutions of higher level of learning, that is one of the interests.
You have to argue that. I mean, you have to. You can't say we don't give any preference to blacks, and then turn around and say we do give preference to them, but we do it lawfully because we're trying to increase diversity of the educational experience for the students.
I think that there is something very different between the hiring decision and the process to get people before a committee for interview. And I think that those lines are getting blurred here.
The problem is that your discrimination at the, if you want to call it that, at the interview stage, right? Maybe that's not in itself actionable. But that then becomes evidence, along with Bowen's admissions and the points and so on, that begins to, you know, suggest that there is a reverse discrimination.
The points, again, were never a part of the decision because they weren't in front of the decision maker at the time that he had to make his recommendation.
That's true, but you can have evidence that allows an inference of what may have been in his mind, even though the evidence was generated later.
But what the committee...
What Bowen said today, of course I appointed Hudson because he was black. Would you say that was irrelevant because it had come after the decision?
Of course not. But what was in the mind of the committee was not something that Mr. Bowen was privy to. So I don't think that you can take their point system that they developed that is not in compliance with any of the guidelines or any of the processes at Lincoln Land and assign their thinking to Mr. Bowen.
So has this... So is this committee disbanded because it's not doing what it's supposed to do?
All committees are made for per position hiring.
Ad hoc.
Yes, they're ad hoc. No committee continues. So it's our position that the administrative pressure just was only there in terms of time constraints, and Mr. Bowen testified to that. Pat Falkenberg corroborated that and said that they were working under administrative pressure and had time constraints. She at no time said that Mr. Bowen said, or the only time that she said that Mr. Bowen connected that with the actual hiring decision was in response to a leading question. But when asked directly, did he say he was under administrative pressure to hire Mr. Hudson, she said no. I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Berger. Mr. Baker, how much time does he have? 3 minutes? Do you have anything further?
I do, Judge Posner. Thank you. A couple of quick facts that I want to rebut. First and foremost, Pat Falkenberg's testimony, it went back and forth. We were both present. We were both asking her questions. The last question that I asked her, I believe it was the last question, was when Mr. Bowen said that he faced administrative pressure, was it your understanding that he was referring to administrative pressure to do something quickly or administrative pressure to select Mr. Bowen? Her response to that was both. And I think that that's clear by reading through her testimony. Second, the Duffy case, which has been relied upon significantly by both Lincoln Land and by the district court. The Duffy case is an Eighth Circuit case where the issue there, first of all, in Duffy, the Eighth Circuit found it.
I'm hung up on the case. So you have,
okay. All right.
Want to say more about the evidence? The evidence was important.
The other question that I want to address, I believe, was raised by you, Judge Sykes, about whether Mr. Bowen actually had this information of what the committee members' preferences were. We believe that there is sufficient evidence to suggest that he did. This chart outlining the number of votes was compiled by a man named Art Meyer. Mr. Meyer was asked during his deposition if he forwarded that to Mr. Bowen before he made his decision. Mr. Meyer said, yes, he did. Now, they provided to us in evidence an email that was from Mr. Meyer to Eileen to Patty outlining that same ranking system that was dated after the fact. But that in no way is dispositive on the question of whether that information was provided to Mr. Bowen ahead of time. Mr. Meyer says that it was. So I believe that that creates a fact issue that makes summary judgment inappropriate. Mm-hmm. I think that the ultimate issue in the case is, was race a factor? And the reality is there is no way that you can look at this case and say race was not a factor. If it weren't for Mr. Hudson's race, he would not have gotten this job because he never would have been afforded an interview in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have nothing further unless the panel has any questions for me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you.
Fifth case for argument is Phelps.